At 3 minutes after 3 o'clock, I'm Hugh Hamilton, and you are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM right here in the Big Mango, Nueva York, in the great city of New York, and you're listening to the program Talkback, a gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas. Our telephone number, as you know, is 212-209-2900, accessible anywhere in these great United States where you might be listening, 212-209-2900. Our immediate listenership, of course, resides in the states of New York, New Jersey, of course, Connecticut, and of course parts of Pennsylvania. And it is my understanding also we can even be heard in parts of Delaware. And so we invite you to make a note of that telephone number, call your friends and family, and let them know that Talkback is on the air, heard Monday through Thursday from 3 to 5 in the afternoon here at WBAI 99.5 FM, community-sponsored, community radio, listener-sponsored radio. And we thank you very much for inviting us into your homes. Our engineer this afternoon is Mr. Michael G. Haskins, our station's chief announcer. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Haskins.
A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Hamilton.
Mr. Haskins, it is my understanding that you're about to vacate the premises and that it is your plan to leave your protege behind.
That is correct.
Your protege, by the way, how do we solve a problem like Maria? Your protege with whom I had a very engaging afternoon, I think, last Thursday, and she acquitted herself with distinction at the board, I must let you know. This, of course, being in no small measure a credit to your own expertise, your tutelage and your guidance.
You're
and your supervision.
Right, and I thank you very much for that.
Okay, great. And Maria England is, of course, the person to whom I refer, and she's waiting in the wings, and at some point this afternoon I believe that you will relinquish control of the boards to her, and I'm sure that once again she will do you proud.
Thank you.
And your weekend was fine.
It really was. I spent part of the afternoon with my dad, being Sunday, and part of the afternoon with both of my sons, one of them being in town for specifically Father's Day, came up from school to see me.
You are a father?
Yes.
Which means what to you, sir?
What do you mean? What it means what to me?
Yes, I mean, apart from the biological relationship.
Socrates revisited from last
week. Isn't that something? We're going to do some more of that, aren't we? Yeah, didn't you like that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Well, look, happy belated Father's Day.
Thank you very much.
I also had a good Father's Day myself, and so, you know, we're all very happy here. This good Monday afternoon at 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. Now, we've got a special treat in store for you this afternoon, and I'll let you know what it is in a moment. In fact, I'll let you know now. This afternoon, I have invited into the studio, into this space, someone who is by no means a stranger to this particular segment of our broadcast day. She, in fact, is the person who set the tone for this particular segment, and someone who I have attempted to emulate in some degree, unsuccessfully in large respects, but nevertheless, someone who has set the tone for this listenership, built this listenership up here at WBAI, and she is now our general manager, Utrecht C. Lead. I have mentioned to you before on numerous occasions that she's also a family friend, someone I have known for the past 15 years or so, and I'm very privileged to say that I have been a recipient of her friendship and her regard over the years, and I'm happy to welcome her to the studios of WBAI in this particular time slot this afternoon once again. It's 8 minutes after 3 o'clock. Good afternoon, Ms. Lead.
Well, thank you, Hugh. It's wonderful being with you, always. It's wonderful being with you.
Okay, good. Well, now that we've established for the benefit of listeners that we're with each other and that it's a wonderful thing, you know, I always get a tad nervous whenever you're in the studio because
why?
I know these are your people. These are your people.
And they walk around with a stamp in the middle of their forehead, yeah, saying, "One of you treacherous people."
One of you treacherous people. You know, and believe me, working here, succeeding you in this time slot has been a tremendous pleasure, and I'm very happy that you were able to make the time this afternoon, because I know you've been extremely busy since taking the helm.
Certainly, when you call, one must obey. You are the he who must be obeyed.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about various and sundry matters.
Okay.
We're going to talk this afternoon about the battle for the mind, but we're also going to talk a bit about you, about your experience since you've taken over the helm here at WBAI, mm-hmm, as general manager. We're going to talk a bit about some of the issues that have arisen during the course of your stewardship, a stewardship, mm-hmm, which I must say, even though by way of disclaimer, I have made it very clear in the beginning that you're a friend of mine, but in addition to that, you're the general manager, and I am someone, I serve at your pleasure here in this time slot. But we're going to talk a bit about some of the issues you've had to deal with during your tenure as general manager thus far. What are some of your plans as we move forward, mm-hmm, in listener-sponsored radio, whether you believe that we need to perhaps reshape our thinking on the question of community radio, listener-sponsored radio? Mm-hmm. What is the relationship between the radio station, the people who work here, and the people who listen, the people who subscribe, because it's very different from commercial radio? We're going to talk about all that, and of course, anything else that you want to talk about this afternoon here at WBAI. It is now 10 minutes after 3 o'clock. We'll take a break, and when we return, I will begin a discussion with our general manager, Utrice C. Lead, and at some point this afternoon, I'm also going to open the telephones at 212-209-2900 for your comments and questions. As usual, it would be appreciated if you would let us know who you are. You can say Mike from Manhattan. That's perfectly fine. It doesn't have to be your given name. And it helps us to understand where we're being heard, who is listening, and in addition to that, I would also appreciate it if you would phrase, format, structure your questions, your comments as concisely as possible so that we can get the maximum benefit out of the time being made available to us this afternoon by our guest, Utrice Lead, General Manager here at WBAI. At 11 minutes after 3 o'clock, we'll take a break and we will return after this. the compact disc, Salsa Europe. It's Afro-Cuban salsa music. And that particular selection, Salsa Mania, from Finland, Tutu Tata. And I'm told that the... Who is the... well, I don't know. It says here, Candy A, or something. At some point before we... oh, here we go. Candela Records. That's who it
Candela.
Is. Candela Records.
Si.
Okay, good. It's 14 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're listening to Talk Back, 212-209-2900. And my guest in studio this afternoon is our general manager here at WBAI, Yutri C. Lead. Good afternoon again, Ms. Lead.
Thank you, sir, Hugh.
You have been general manager here for, what, 6 months now?
Wow.
All right.
Yes.
Tempus fugit.
It certainly does.
Okay, good.
Nothing like fugits like Tempus.
How was your Father's Day?
My Father's Day was contemplative and good fun because I spent it in the company of the folks, the great, wonderful people at St. James Presbyterian Church.
Where's that?
That's at 141st Street and St. Nicholas Avenue, and they had, and they certainly did deliver, they had the mother of all church concerts, and it was serious. I believe that St. James has the best church choir ever, anywhere. I put that choir up against anybody, anytime, anywhere, for any kind of music, going from operatic music to blues to jazz to traditional Negro spiritual music to foot stomping gospel to beautiful, just beautiful lullabies. Whatever you want, you get it.
Hmm.
And the minister of music there is a friend of mine who happens to be the... She's a Broadway composer. She's actually more than that. She is an arranger and composer, and she just published, in fact, just last year, a cantata which premiered with, I believe it was, the Wisconsin Symphony.
Hmm.
And she's a symphonic conductor and serious music. And the choir director was the star of Ragtime. His name is Lawrence Hamilton. I might be a relative if you look at it. But it was just so wonderful. It was just so wonderful. I had a blast.
Now,
contemplative because...
Yes.
My father was a very pronounced presence in my life.
Yes, it was. Your father was deceased.
Yes. Died in 1973. And remains a very large and indelible presence in the minds of all of us. He and my mother had 9 children. And to this day, I don't think I need any further instruction about what it is to be fulfilled in yourself, to live comfortably in your own skin and in your own head. Then from the lessons I've learned from my parents, and particularly in a unique way from my father, who, by the way, never went to high school, but in my mind was perhaps the most brilliant person I had ever known. He taught us very well about the need to have that... extraordinary combination of book sense and common sense, he would say. You have to have book sense, which is good, but common sense as well. And he was a businessman. He did very, very well in business. And up and down, we saw the successes of business. We saw the failures of business growing up.
What kind of business did he have?
Well, he did all kinds of things. He was the first person I recall on our little island to sell frozen meat as a result of the war. It occurred to him that it was a good idea.
This, of course, is in Trinidad and Tobago,
yeah, right,
which is where you're from. And
yep.
And your father was born there?
My father was born in Grenada, actually.
Oh.
And at some point, there's some mad love affair between Grenada and Trinidad.
You're sort of, you're kind of paro here, you know.
That's right. Yeah. We're interchangeable.
Oh, okay.
Most Grenadians end up in Trinidad. Most Trinidadians would have somebody Grenadian in their family. But... I sold auto parts, particularly Pirelli tires and Valvoline and all that other kind of stuff, and had a liquor store, had a grocery store, owned a movie theater, and was quite entrepreneurial. My mother also had her own business, so I grew up in a business community, a business world. All of our friends that we played with, all their parents owned little businesses, and that was the nature of our lives. You know, growing up, nothing spectacular in the sense that we were, you know, like the Walmart.
Right.
But the fact that people had an entrepreneurial spirit, whether it was from the street vendor to somebody who owned a store, or somebody who owned some cabs or something. People were quite entrepreneurial
now,
in my little town.
Now, you say nothing spectacular, but I happen to know, and I have remarked about this before here at the radio station, that your parents had 9 children,
mm-hmm.
and every one of you, for some reason, is a something. You've all been able. I know you've got brothers. One of whom was my personal physician at one time.
Yeah.
And everyone has achieved a certain level of scholarship or distinction in one of the areas of their professions and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
How is that possible?
Well, it's possible because it was mandatory, and it was mandatory because we had two parents who worked very, very hard for one main objective. It had nothing to do with them. It had to do with us. And the objective was to make sure that we, the progeny of this union, would be provided what we needed to have in order to make something of ourselves in the world and to contribute meaningfully to the world. And that, in fact, was a pronounced bit of home schooling, that your life is important not because it belongs to you, but in large measure because it belongs to other people, in terms of the service that you can render, in terms of the good that you can do. And that was a very, very important part of our schooling at home, our training at home. And so at an early age, we were sent off to various and sundry places because, as you know, Trinidad was a colonial society and is now a neo-colonial society. And in such societies, there is a limit to what you can do and what you can achieve because the infrastructure simply isn't there. So very often you find that you have to go someplace else to realize just very modest aims and objectives and goals in your life. It is not a major discovery. I'm sure you've covered Caribbean affairs and international affairs. You know that practically the prime ministers and presidents of most countries ended up having to go someplace else to get a basic education. And that is, for the most part, they come from societies that have been conquered one way or the other, whether by imperialism or colonialism, which is the same. And so the infrastructure, simply to build the mind, simply to cultivate an intellect, those opportunities are very limited. And that, in large measure, is what promoted this quest for education and immigration. You had to go someplace else in order to fulfill rather modest objectives.
Now, your life has taken a very interesting trajectory, and I mention this because now here you are from Trinidad and Tobago.
Proud of that, by the way. Yes.
Very good. The land of the hummingbird.
The land of perfect people, I like to say.
Well, I mean, you know, where all the men are strong and all the women are good looking and all the children are above average.
Yes.
Yes. But when we first met back in 1985, you had already established for yourself a very substantial presence and as an authority in the area, here in the New York tri-state area, as an authority in the field of African-American studies and the African-American perspective on things general, political, social, economic, and so forth. Now, I know that throughout the history of this country, going back at least, 150, maybe 200 years, we have had a very significant Caribbean presence in the radical African-American movement at various levels, and in fact we have discussed this at some length in various programs before. But what was it that got you so impassioned about this that you became what you have now become, an authority in the field of African-American studies, in the field of African-American struggle, and in the field of African-American empowerment?
Well, I don't know if I would go that far to say that I'm an authority.
I have gone that far.
I would tell you that I do not see, and it is the same kind of experience, I believe, that many of us have. And that is the experience of having to deal with the assault on our personhood, on the essence of our being. And I had to deal with it in a rather crude way when I arrived here. And my education, in a sense, began here, an education of a different sort. Now, when you're growing up in a colonial society like in Trinidad, and, you know, basically, if I were to show you my family, you would say, my God, what happened here? I mean, we have everybody in my family. You know, my name, Lead, is my great-grandfather is German. You know, we have Caribs, we have Spanish-speaking people, we have Chinese in our family, we have Pakistanis, Hindus, Buddhists, you name it, they're all in my family. My family literally is a rainbow family. We have people who look quite Nordic. In fact, Maria looks very much like my cousins.
Okay.
And she's from Sweden.
That's right.
I have cousins who look just like her, red hair and all. And I have cousins who look like dark black, blue, black. So, and in the middle we have the whole rainbow. So, I know what it is to have tolerance for people because, in fact, that's the way we grew up. We jumped over all these cultural and ethnic hurdles with very great ease every day. And that was life. It was just life. In my little village, for example, you know, we were raised as Catholics.
Princess Town, Trinidad and Tobago.
There you go.
Is that in the southern part of Trinidad?
Yes, that's
okay,
right.
Good.
That's where
you southern.
Truly perfect people are from this little town. Everybody from this little town, absolutely perfect. But we were raised as Catholics, but, you know, we knew about Ramadan and Puja and Pakwat and Diwali and Hussein and all the other. You know, we didn't know it then because that was just life. We were, quote, multicultural.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to boast about it. We lived it. And then I came to the United States. I came to New York ready to go to college. I was still in my mid-teens, and by then I had satisfied all of the requirements, and I'm ready. And I'm sitting there in front of a woman who is an evaluator, and she's chewing gum while she talks to me, and we're talking for about half an hour, having a very pleasant conversation, I thought. And then she says, "So, do you speak English?" And I said a prayer for myself. In fact, I gave myself extreme unction, the last sacrament, because I knew I was dead.
Well, and not only that.
Here is this woman, clearly a blithering idiot, sitting in front of me. We're having a conversation in English, and halfway, I mean, we down the road, well into this dialogue, and she asks, "Do I speak English?" I knew I was dead. And what upset me about it was, she probably was not at all qualified to do this job. You know, she was asking me where I was in chemistry, and I told her, you know, are we doing titrations and redoing this stuff you were doing in college, I had already done. And she evaluated me incorrectly and said that I should go to high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I should go to high school as a freshman. So, right there, I cannot to this day explain to you how I felt sitting there, utterly hopeless, utterly helpless to change the course of my life. And that this woman, based, in my view, largely upon what it is I looked like to her, based on her own socialization in this country, decided that based on what she was looking at, I was not to be given an opportunity to realize the full extent of my gifts. And in one fell swoop, in this condensed period of time, this one person changed the course of my life with impunity. And that made me understand what it was like to live in a society where the rules, whatever it is you think should happen, doesn't happen. And people, some people, are capable of making rules up as they go. And they commit these acts of genocide very quietly and with the full blessing of a whole system, a whole apparatus, would come behind them and bolster them in that kind of aggravated assault. And I said, boy, I better get to learn this thing called America. I better really understand the system. And I started voraciously reading about it. And that is why I don't view it as an African-American thing. I view it as an African thing. Because, in the end, that's what it's all about. Whether we are from Trinidad, or you are from Guyana, or somebody else may be from Barbados, or somebody else may be from Martinique, or Haiti, or whatever it is, somebody may even be from the continent, we are all colonized. We are all conditioned to accept this brutality against our innermost selves, the essence of ourselves. We are expected to deal with it, to accept it, to not fight against it, because this is the preordained order of things. And I grew up with an entirely different sensibility where this is concerned. I grew up believing, because this was my enculturation, I grew up believing myself to be powerful in and of myself, not because society says, okay, you're powerful, but because you occupy space, because you are a child of God, because you live and breathe, you know, cognito ergo sum. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, therefore, I am. And that is a principle that I uphold and have upheld all throughout my life. I refuse to have anybody say to me that I should accept the preordained order of things, in which that order mitigates my fulfillment of what it is I think I need to achieve, or what it is I think I need to give and offer.
We're talking with Utrice Lee, the general manager here at WBAI, and it's 34 minutes now. No, 33 minutes, I'm sorry, after the hour. And she's our guest in studio here on the Talkback program. I'm Hugh Hamilton, and the engineer now is Maria Englund. Ms. Lee, you have used some some strong language. You used words like genocide, aggravated assault, and brutality. Are these words that you think needlessly inflame when it comes to a discourse on race relations here in America?
I hope it inflames, because from my vantage point, everybody pretty much dances around this question, and yet we know it is at the root of so many societal ills. And I mean it in a logical way. You look at life. You know, some friends of mine and I recently went to Windows on the World.
Mm-hmm.
It's a posh place. So we get up to the 107th floor, and immediately questions are asked, as if, my, aren't you out of place here? I mean, it comes across very nice, and it's coming from a black person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, three of us, we're all black. But the person greeting us greets us with this sense of awe or discomfort, as if it was something extraordinary that three black people would go there to have lunch.
How can you afford
it? How can I afford it? So everything, we get past that. You pay attention to it only because the discomfort is so palpable. Not on your part, not on my part, but on the part of the individuals whose job it is. Now, this is their job. Their job is to greet everybody. Whatever it is, whoever it is walks through that door, come on in, sit down. We'll separate you from a lot of your money. Come on in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we sit down, and during the course of the meal, one of our party had to make a call and had to go past the entranceway in order to make the call. And then when that person went to make the call on a cell phone,
mm-hmm.
the person was told to be a little less loud. Now, there were other people talking equally loudly because, in fact, on the 107th floor, it is hard to get a cell phone call made.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. Now, what should have been a very pleasant and wonderful experience still is marred by this thing. And it comes to us in a skin that looks like us, only because we're all conditioned.
Which raises, of course, the logical question, and that is, do you think that this process of, I guess it has been described as colonization of the mind by some.
Yes.
To what degree is this experience sufficiently pervasive within the black community or within communities of color? And we're going to talk about political correctness in a moment, because I have great trouble with that.
We all are conditioned by it. We all are conditioned by it because we are all colonized, you see. We are all colonized.
We're talking about the mind here now.
The mind.
Yes.
The mind is a colonized mind. The battle, I used to say on this program, the battle is for the mind. The assumption being that some people can reason because they're preordained with those virtues. They're born with such virtues. They can think for themselves. They have superior intellect. They are quite analytical. And more than likely, 99.5% of the time,
yes,
they come to the correct conclusion. The flip side is true, too. The flip side holds as well. That if it is preordained that some people are gifted, it also is preordained that others are not. Therefore, it is questionable whether you have a mind at all. And if you do have a mind, it must be empty. You must have that sign across your forehead that says vacant. You know, the one that lights up,
yes,
at, like the old side roadside motels. Yeah, vacant. And therefore, it is somebody's job to tell you what to think. Because when you are told what to think, your whole life is controlled by remote. If you do not generate your own thoughts, if you are not in charge of what is in your head, you are a perfect candidate for manipulation. If you exert even the slightest control over what goes into your brain, you defy the preordained order of things, and you will be dealt with because you dare not defy. Your job, if you are on that flip side of the coin, your job is to have your mind made up for you.
This is the first, by the way, in a series of discussions that I'm having with Utrecht Lead, or general manager here at WBAI. It's now 40 minutes after the hour, and our telephone number is 212-209-2900. Your questions for Utrecht Lead coming up at the top of the hour, or thereabouts. But first, there's a whole range of things I want to talk with you about, which is why this is the first in a series of these discussions to which I hope you will submit yourself.
Well, I want to ask you a question. I mean, we've known each other now for 15 years. Have I ever asked you, Hugh, what is your political philosophy? What is your ideology?
No, you have never done so. Not at all. And that raises, in my mind, a further question. This is going to happen increasingly because you're accustomed to asking questions, as am I.
Yeah.
So, and I guess you're probably not accustomed to being on that side of the microphone.
I really believe it to be sacred ground. I really
Indeed.
Believe people's minds are their own property. They must control it. Even when we worked together at a newspaper, you were the editor of the international section.
Indeed.
Would I say, okay, this is what you ought to write?
No,
This is your story this week?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, it was the first opportunity that I had, even though I had worked in a number of media in various countries before coming to the City Sun from the UN. I remember it was a particularly unique approach in which you would give all of the reporters and editors, but more importantly, I would say not even the editors, but also the reporters, an opportunity to pitch stories.
That's
and
right.
And to say, you know, here is what I want to talk about. Here is what impassions me.
Yes.
Here is what I would like to explore. And you would provide guidance. You would, you know, whip out a very fat book. I don't know. I guess to this day you don't have a Palm Pilot. You never
described
me as being someone who could maintain a Palm Pilot.
No.
And you would say, well, you know, consider some of these possible sources if you're trying to get a start on this. Develop your own sources.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're looking for anyone to start the discussion, you know, and you were very, very free with that. And as we know, sources are the mother's milk of the profession in which we are engaged. But I have to ask you this, the question of political correctness. I started to say black people, African Americans, people of color, and then you mentioned it's an African thing and so on. Where does political correctness come into all this? Has the pendulum swung so far in one direction that, in a sense, the discussion is defined by the terms that we use rather than the other way around?
Well, I don't know about political correctness. I haven't had very much regard for political correctness. I think it is important to stake your claim based on what it is you have, based on evidence that you have invested some serious work in the thought or the philosophy that you present. I think, though, that that does not negate the responsibility to know what it is you're talking about. I'm not interested in forming anybody's opinions. I really am not. I think it is a very bad thing to do. However, I think it is important to stimulate in a person an interest in validating their thoughts. But that is their work. If we do our work well as journalists, as broadcasters now, we would provide the stimulus. We would provide the wherewithal for people to take it to the next step. We would challenge a thought, and that is enough. That is important. This is so critical, especially for a radio station like this. I don't want to tell people what to think. I really don't. And I resent people telling me what to think. I like the idea of testing the strength of your argument, testing the validity of your thought, and you testing the strength of my argument and the validity of my thought. Because in the final analysis, when you're talking about people's brains, you are, in fact, invading sacred territory. And some of us have come to the belief that we need not regard people's brains as sacred. That we could tell you what to think, in the same way that the rabid right would tell people what to think, or the rabid left now is telling people what to think. But eventually, it is the strength of your argument that counts. It is the validity of the thought. It is the level of investment you make in that thought, the level of investigation that you have carried out. These are what matter. Now, I know that in the so-called world of the left, and, you know, I have had many occasions to challenge notions of the left and the progressive and so forth. All these notions, I don't even deal with labels, which is why, though I know you for 15 years, I've never asked you, Hugh, what is your politics? I'm not concerned about how you describe your politics. I'm interested in how you behave. I'm interested in your conduct as a human being, as a man. I'm interested in your conduct. Your conduct tells me your political beliefs. You could tell me until you turn green, well, I am a super radical revolutionary, frothing radical revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if your conduct is that of a rat, you could tell me whatever it is you would like me to believe you are. I see how you behave. I judge you by how you behave because, you know, the old biblical saying, as a man thinketh,
so is he.
So is he.
That's right.
I'm interested in what you
think. Which is also true of women. But
true. I'm interested in what the empirical evidence tells me about your conduct. It tells me about what your thoughts are. It tells me the validity of your thoughts. If you are, let's say, a conservative person, let's say you describe yourself politically as a conservative person, and I see you acting out of sync with that definition, you could tell me you're conservative until you're green. I know exactly what you are. On the other hand, you could tell me that you are progressive, but if you act like a Klansman, you could tell me you're progressive until you run out of air. I know, for me, I know what your conduct suggests. So your definition, your self-definition means nothing to me, which is why I don't like people to describe themselves with labels. I don't describe myself with a label. People say, well, what are you? I'm Eutrice C. Lead, daughter, daughter of Claude and Gertrude.
That's right. And the C, for the moment, we will not.
No.
It is the one thing that I have holding here. Because I know
you
what
know
the C is for.
Yes, indeed.
Now,
that makes you privileged, by the way.
Absolutely. Now, you came to this radio station several years ago, but your elevation to the position of general manager has been accompanied by some rather tumultuous experiences here. So it's been it has not been a smooth or pristine 6 months.
No.
What has been the biggest challenge for you doing this job as general manager here at WBAI, part of the Pacifica Network? And how do you see the next 6 months?
The biggest job has been to cope with the inundation of lies and distortions and misinformation and disinformation by people who know better, but who are fulfilling, I could best describe it as a private agenda. The conduct, I tell you, is not only reprehensible, but scary.
The conduct of whom?
The conduct of several individuals attached to the anti-Pacifica team squad is reprehensible and scary. But we continue. Here at this station, we continue because some of us are still holding fast to, you know, good old-fashioned family values, like manners. Now, things that your mother and father taught you, speak the truth, try to play nice.
Play well with others.
Play well with others, that's right, and don't beat up your brother and your sister. Little things like that that still hold true, no matter how sophisticated people think they are. We have been subjected, the entire system, and particularly the executive director and the board of Pacifica, have been subjected to an unrelenting and horrific campaign of terror.
Why?
I have no idea why, but I will tell you, because this is the first of many conversations, and more will be revealed as we go. But it is important to say that the individuals, and we'll get to talking about them in the specific sense, but the individuals who have been conducting this campaign have a number of agendas that they wish to fulfill. The conduct tells us all we need to know about whatever philosophical ideas they are holding to, or they claim to be holding to. Now, it is one thing if you and I disagree, and we have. We've disagreed quite a lot about a lot of things. But we've always been able, within 2 seconds, right after we disagree, to continue a discussion quite pleasantly, laughing all the way.
Of course. Civility.
Well, not just civility. It is about respecting that you are entitled to have your own ideas. I'm entitled to have my own ideas. And if we live in a situation in which, for better or for worse, a chain of command has been established, or an order has been established, let us resolve our conflicts within what we would consider to be the rules of engagement. We have rules. We do. For some in the so-called progressive community, this is tantamount to fascism, to have rules. And some are proudly anarchistic, in fact insulting the word anarchy, because anarchy is the absence of rules, but not just the absence of imposed rules, but the absence of rules because anarchists claim they exert for themselves, on themselves, the greatest self-discipline. That is why they defy imposed rules and imposed order. Anarchists are supposed to be exceedingly well-regulated human beings. So it gives anarchy a bad name. You just look at the conduct. Look at the conduct, and it tells you all you need to know. The words don't matter. Let me just give you an example. Several people have decided, this discussion has taken different permutations. Depending on the month or the week of the month, the mantra changes. I understand in the last several weeks, the mantra has been, the Pacifica board is pretty much the spawn of Satan. Well, if that is the case, exercise some reason here, and judgment, and logic. Is it odd that most of the people who are being attacked, and I use the word euphemistically.
Attacked. That is, yes.
Yes. Is it odd that they all, for the most part, are people of color? Isn't that odd? And then, not only do you target these people, you mount a public campaign to target them. You say to the public, we have decided unilaterally, no vote or anything is required, we just unilaterally decide that these are the people we are going to terrorize. And we will terrorize them because we don't agree with them. And we will terrorize them by hounding them out of their private work, the way they make a living. We will hound them out of their jobs because they don't deserve to feed their families. Because we disagree with them. Therefore, they deserve, and their children deserve, to be starved. We don't agree with them, so we will make it necessary for them to move from their homes because we will embarrass them in front of their neighbors. We don't agree with them, so that we will threaten to make public things that we know about their personal lives or their professional lives. We don't agree with them, so it is okay to physically attack them if you have to. And in fact, we had a situation occur right here in the station in which one of the employees here was physically punched out by somebody militarized in this way to come into the station and behave this way. And there was no public outcry to say this is conduct that we cannot support. We do not at all condone violence. So when people act this way, they tell you a lot about themselves. We disagree, therefore it is okay to call and threaten your life. We could call and make death threats against you and your children. We disagree with you, and we are progressives. We are the right ones, and we are the progressive ones. We disagree with you, so we can call you nigger. In fact, Maria, sitting behind the board from Sweden, will tell you that during our fundraising drive, she had never been called nigger before until our fundraising drive. And what did she say to me? She said, and to others here, she said, I had no idea that this is the way progressive people behave. I said, I had no idea that you considered them progressive. But this is where it is. And you begin to understand what it is people are reacting to and what the reaction is at base level, whatever skin people are wearing, the fact is the common element is the conditioning of the mind. And that's what Amos Wilson talks about all the time. The mind has been seized and colonized, and everybody in the United States and points beyond it has been conditioned to accept that this is okay. Where is it written in the normal logical world that it is okay to say to someone, I disagree with you, therefore I can kill you, and then have that be considered progressive?
It's now, we're just about approaching 4 o'clock, and so I'm going to take a break at 4 o'clock. I'd like you to take a look at this compact disc. We're talking with Utrecht C. Lead, who is general manager here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'd like you to select one of those, I guess, Numero Uno from Salsa Group. Okay, good.
This is a salsa group. This is a favorite album of mine.
I know.
This is from Scotland.
From Scotland?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, great. We're talking with Utrecht Lead. This is WBAI.
Oh, you know what? You know, in honor of...
I have to do a time check, or I'm going to get...
In honor of Maria from Sweden. This is salsa from Sweden. Do number 9.
Number 9.
El ritmo de la vida. The rhythm of life.
Rhythm of life. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, where it is now 30 seconds after 4 o'clock. We're talking with Utrecht C. Lead, our general manager here at the radio station. I am Hugh Hamilton, and our engineer this afternoon, Maria England. We'll be right back. Our telephone number, 212-209-2900. We've got a full board, but you can call your friends and family and let them know that we'll be getting to your calls a little later on in this 4 o'clock hour. We'll be right back after this. Thank you.